Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Hi, I'm Ron Hagen. I am chairman of the Fiduciary Standards Committee at Roland Criss. It's my pleasure to be your host for this 20-minute podcast. We're going to be addressing a fiduciary risk management update that's focused on payroll and contribution file submissions. The reason we're focusing on this issue today is because it is one of the top three plan administration errors and causes of retirement plan fees and penalties assessed against plan sponsors by the U.S. Department of Labor. Given this, we wanted to devote special attention to payroll and file submission considerations, starting with the timeliness with which your contribution files are submitted to your record keeper. But I'd like to take a step back first and talk about why timeliness is such a big deal. I have with me today Christy Arthur, who is the Director of Fiduciary Solutions at Roland Criss. Christy, could you give us a briefing on that particular question?
Absolutely. So there are very specific rules around the timeliness of contributions. So the Department of Labor rules require that employers deposit their deferrals, and that is employee and employer contributions, to a qualified plan trust as soon as they are able. However, in no event can those deposits be made later than the 15th business day of the month following. But the rule about the 15th business day isn't an allowance or protection, or what is also called a safe harbor for depositing deferrals. Rather, it sets a maximum deadline. If the employer doesn't make deposits timely, that failure may constitute both an operational mistake, giving rise to plan disqualification. You know, if the plan specifies a date by which the employer must deposit elective deferrals, it can also give rise to a prohibited transaction. So although an employer can correct an operational mistake under certain correction programs, a prohibited transaction cannot be corrected in that manner. But the DOL does maintain a voluntary fiduciary correction program that can be used to resolve those prohibited transactions. And I tell you, Ron, across the industry, plans both large and small, audits and reviews continue to reveal challenges with this particular topic, the timeliness of deposits.
We hear from plan sponsors, some of whom happen to be our clients, that confusion exists regarding the rule for depositing payroll deductions into employees' retirement accounts. It seems that a lack of clarity can lead to an unhappy encounter with the Department of Labor. So, Christy, would you do me a favor and summarize the rules for us?
Indeed. So I think a lot of confusion comes because people are so familiar. We've long talked about that 15th day rule. And a lot of us kind of get locked in on that. And so when we're doing our contribution uploads, we think, well, in no way does it ever take us a month and a half to get those contributions in. So we're good. But let's talk about some other things when it comes to timeliness. The Department of Labor actually provides a 7 business day safe harbor rule for employee contributions to plans with fewer than 100 participants. So for those of you with less than 100 participants, you actually have 7 business days from the pay date or payroll end date, whichever it is you're using consistently, to get those contribution files loaded. That is a 7-day safe harbor, which means if a participant sues you for missed earnings or delayed investment, so long as your contributions are going in that 7-day time frame, you as a fiduciary have some protections. Now, obviously, it can't protect you from being sued, but it is protection if ever you are sued.
Christy, I noticed that you specified 7 days as a safe harbor period for plans under 100 participants. Is it not the same for larger plans?
That's a great question. And I think, again, this is what lends to that confusion. So we have this maximum standard in ERISA that says 15 days after the month following. But then the Department of Labor has given us the 7-day safe harbor for plans with under 100 participants. Now, plans that have more than 100 participants actually face a much shorter deposit requirement that's not nearly as well defined. So when the Department of Labor comes in and they're reviewing a plan for timeliness, they are going to look at the trend. From that trend, and by trend, I mean they're going to go look at the timeliness of deposits. They're going to go look at the track record of deposits. So from that trend, they are going to determine what they call a precedent. So that trend is established by measuring the business days between the pay date or payroll end date, as I mentioned earlier, whichever you're using, just make sure you're consistent in that. But they're gonna count the business days between that pay date or payroll end date and the actual trade date. So for example, if most of your files are loaded same day, so that means your pay date or payroll end date, let's say, is 3/15, and you load the file and it trades on 3/15, that is same day processing. Therefore, same day is your precedent. That precedent becomes the ongoing standard against which your contribution timeliness will be measured, and quite frankly, against which corrections will be expected. So if one of your files is loaded same day, but the rest are a blend of 2, 3, 4, 5 days, the Department of Labor is likely to ask, okay, why did one go in same day? Why could the others not be processed in the same manner? So even an application of averages is not going to be a fail-safe. The Department of Labor is striving to ensure that participants obtain the investment advantage of earnings initiating on their contribution as soon as administratively feasible. And it has been found in some audits and investigations that even when an administrative delay is justifiable, earnings are still expected to be contributed to the participants. So if you're one of those plans with less than 100 participants and you have files loaded outside of that 7-day safe harbor I talked about earlier, those are going to need to be corrected. And while you can correct to the 7-day safe harbor, that is not without risk in the event of a DOL auditor investigation. The safest bet is to identify your precedent and correct back to that. And I'll say this as well. We have to remember fiduciaries have important responsibilities. We are subject to standards of conduct because we act on behalf of participants in a plan and their beneficiaries, the primary responsibility of which is to act solely in their interest, solely in the interest of plan participants and their beneficiaries, and with exclusive purpose of providing benefits to them. So given that, while delays may be justified, we've seen things like system issues or staffing challenges, given that those things may very well happen and they may be justifiable or provable, so to speak, documented, the Department of Labor does not want to see participants paying the price for technology issues.
Wow, Christy, thank you. From all of that, if you would, could you tell us what the key issues are then that our clients should be sensitive to regarding timely deposits of employee contributions to retirement accounts?
Absolutely. So I would maybe coin this the lines of defense. How do we prevent? How do we catch these issues? Who is watching to help our clients catch these issues? So I'm going to talk about a couple of different what I would call levels or again lines of defense, levels of defense. So first and foremost, I want to talk about our clients and their operations at the payroll level. One thing I would pay special attention to is who is loading your contribution files. Are they trained? Do they understand the implications of that task and the timeliness requirements? It's imperative that if your person who's responsible for loading those contribution files, if they're having any challenges in that process, that our clients identify those for us so that we can help champion and resolve those issues, because we want to be sure that we help our clients champion the most efficient flow of information for and with them. So who's loading your files? Are they properly trained? Many of them I have found don't even really understand that there is a timeliness requirement. So we have to be sure that those folks understand the implications of what it is they're doing. It's not just a task that they can get to whenever they have time. This really needs to be a priority task if it falls into their workload. So that's payroll level. Now, the next level I want to talk about is what I would say is record keeper TPA level. So what things exist at the record keeper TPA level that will address timeliness? Now, many of you, when you're filling out your annual compliance questionnaire, you're going to see a question in there. It's going to say, have your contributions been submitted timely? Now, if you have historically operated with that 15-day rule in the back of your head, you're going to answer that, yes, it's not taken me a month and a half to get my contributions in. But when we're going back and requesting a timeliness report from the record keeper, and if you ever want one, most record keepers, in fact, I have not come across one yet that cannot provide a timeliness report that gives you your pay date or payroll end date and the trade date so that you can do this review yourself as well. But when we request that report and we're looking at it again for that precedent I talked about earlier, more often than not, 9 times out of 10, we're going to find an outlier, a significant outlier from that precedent. So there, another line of defense, so to speak, is at the record keeper TPA level, your annual compliance questionnaire is going to say, hey, it's time to pay attention again. Have your contributions been submitted timely? That's another opportunity to catch if any issues have occurred. A third level that I'll talk about is for those of you who undergo an audit. So this is kind of the audit line of defense. The audit firm, everyone that we've worked with, does a thorough check on timeliness. So they will essentially request that report from the record keeper TPA, and say, you know, let's take a look at the timeliness. So they're going to track that. But for those who do not undergo that audit, again, this is something that we want to pay special attention to. That really leads me to my fourth line of defense, and that's us. That's Roland Chris, because, you know, we have several plans that do not undergo an audit, that aren't going to have that level of check. So we've always done that annual review. Obviously, for most of our clients, we're responsible for signing the 5500. So we do a review of that before we, that's part of our 5500 submission review process. But for those clients that don't undergo the audit and have all that kind of process, we are going to begin doing quarterly reviews. So rather than wait until that year end for the 5500 review, we're going to be looking at this on a quarterly basis. So if we find any information related to an outlier, we're going to start letting our clients know that. So come April, you're going to start seeing communications from us. Now, if everything looks good and we don't have any concerns or any outliers, we're simply going to make a notation in your quarterly fiduciary report or your QFR report that we come in and report to your committees. We're just going to make a notation in there that everything looks good. We will comment on what your precedent is. But if we find an outlier, we are going to let you know about that. And we will help coordinate that and coordinate any necessary corrections, rather, with your record keeper and TPA.
Well, Christy, we're going to be closing in on our time allotted for today's podcast. So before we get too far towards the end of our time together, I think it would be helpful if you would summarize how Roland Chris fits into the timeliness of deposit issue from a practical work step standpoint.
Absolutely. So one of them I just highlighted, and that was our quarterly reviews. But I mentioned too that we're going to coordinate corrections, and a lot of folks don't really know what that means. So let me talk a little bit outside of our quarterly reviews that they're going to start receiving from us in April. Let's talk about what it means to coordinate corrections with a record keeper. What exactly does that entail? So again, when we do those quarterly reviews, if we find that anomaly or that outlier, we're going to let our clients know, and then we're going to seek to coordinate those corrections with the record keeper TPA. We have found that most record keepers have a documented process for helping with these situations. So they have a documented corrections process, and that's going to include a few steps. So we identify the files in question. We will obtain the client's confirmation. So we'll do a double check on that timeliness and those dates, make sure everything is accurate, make sure nothing needs to change on those dates. And then we're going to provide the required info to the record keeper. And that's going to include the actual breakdown so that the payroll files that went into the system, we're going to tell them this is the date that they went in. And this is the date they really should have gone in. This is the precedent date. And then some record keepers ask for, you know, they may ask for detail around why did the delay occur. Some of them require more document or detail, so to speak, around those delays. Not all, but some do. So that's step one, identify the outlier, make sure the client confirms the information, and then we give the record keeper all the info they need to do the calculations. And 9 times out of 10, the record keeper will do step two for us, and that is to actually calculate missed earnings by participant, by file. That's what the Department of Labor wants you to do. If that participant should have been earning money on their contribution earlier, that's essentially the penalty that they want you to pay. They want you to go contribute those missed earnings by participant, by payroll file that was late. So some record keepers will actually do that by looking at participant allocations. They do an extremely detailed analysis. But I will say that most that I've come across use the DOL corrections calculator, and you can actually go out to the Department of Labor website and find that calculator. It's a bit time consuming. It's a little it's very easy to use. You just plug in a couple of numbers, but again, your record keepers are having to calculate this by file, by participant. So it is a tedious, time consuming calculation for them to walk through. So once they go through that process and they calculate the amounts, all of that gets looked at and approved by the client. And then the record keeper, either the record keeper or you as the client, you're going to load those amounts. So it's going to be like a separate contribution file with those earnings. That's going to go into the plan. So they can get those processed to the participants' accounts. And then there is oftentimes additional forms or documents required to walk through that voluntary correction process that we talked about earlier. That includes a Form 5330. There is an excise tax. That is essentially an additional penalty or fee, so to speak, for the error of delayed contributions. And that is going to the total of that excise tax is going to be 15% of the total amount of the correction. So most record keepers will go so far as to actually fill out that 5330, present it for signature, and they will do all of those filings and get everything ready and take care of everything for you. And if there's any other, you know, forms or paperwork or anything like that, we've actually found, Ron, that the record keepers they work with are, they have very efficient processes set up. And again, that goes to show you how many plans go through this situation. It is not uncommon. So if a plan finds themselves in this situation, I don't want anyone to panic. There are processes that can be implemented to help correct this and to do it in a very prompt time frame.
Well, Christy, it's time for us to conclude our brief time together today. This is a serious topic, and you've covered a lot of ground in a very short time, so I appreciate it. For our audience, if you have any questions about what we've covered today, please call us. Otherwise, you're going to be hearing from us in our quarterly reporting. We're going to let you know if we find anything in your plans, but if you have any questions or needs related to this question and need more understanding or training, let us know how we can help. As always, it's an honor and privilege to serve each of you, and we thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to learn with us today. We look forward to visiting with you again soon when we cover our next payroll and contribution processing topic regarding participant transactions that will have an impact on your payroll and contribution file submissions. We thank you for joining us and have a fantastic day.